Walter Price, Reel 2. So One Night You Were Bombed.
We were bombed in Victoria Barracks, and quite a few ATS girls who were in Nissen Hut in a temporary accommodation within the barracks were killed, and we had to go into a semi-basement, and we were lucky we got away with it. But we saw factories, soap factories, burning, and I had a small room for sleeping accommodation, and I opened the window. I was nearly blown back with the heat, because it was only a couple of 300 yards away from us. And we learned the following day that they'd built concrete shelters in the middle of the road in those days using Quetabond bricks and reinforced rods with a concrete slab roof. And of course there were about 60 to 90 people in it, and the boiling fat ran down the road, so we were told, and didn't have much chance.
Mm-hmm. Your first sort of experience of being under fire, of being bombed, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were bombed, as I said before, in when I was with headquarters 244, and then headquarters 53rd West Division, and then I'd moved to Chief Engineer, and yeah, we were certainly bombed then, but more directly bombed, because yeah.
Did that sort of alter the atmosphere a little bit? Did you feel?
Well, the Colonel Jennett, this rather different Colonel who was with it, had by that time, first thing in the morning, secured alternative accommodation for the Chief Engineer's staff in a place called Glenburn House, which was out at I've forgotten the name of the place now. It's about 6 miles out of Belfast. Mm-hmm. But it was a lovely Georgian type house, and they erected about 6 Nissen huts, and two of them were used for our sleeping accommodation, and the rest were used as offices together with the house itself, which was completely turned into offices, and quite a big drawing office. We ate in the village, and they would feed us breakfast and an evening meal. And I must say that the food that we had from the villagers, there were two of us in one house, and the food was excellent. I'd never seen such food. I mean, Mrs. Maxwell, her name, gave us so much to eat for breakfast that we had to tell her that we couldn't cope. I mean, yeah, we got on very well with the villagers. And it was a very pleasant place, because we were out of the bombing range. It was Dunmurry. Mm-hmm. Which, as you may know now, is a hotbed of something else. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Dunmurry, we stayed there. Until I've missed out. Between Dunmurry and we left Dunmurry in 1942. Mm-hmm. Well, I did, because I got transferred from Chief Engineer, Northern Ireland District, to Chief Engineer, First Army.
Right. We'll just pause there in the chronology now, if we may. Tell me about Colonel Heseltine as a man. What was he like? Was he like his son, you know, that we all know what he looks like?
Well, his son... I'm not sure whether his son was born... his son was born, presumably. Mm. But he'd been an infant.
So what was Colonel Heseltine like?
Well, I had met him, although I didn't realise who he was, because whilst I was an article pupil, he was a representative of a steel company and would come round the offices. But I didn't know who he was until we joined up. He was quite pleasant and acted like a colonel. I mean, as if he was in command, which is important.
Was he popular?
I don't think you can be please everyone. That's life. As I say, I only saw him in the office. Mm. And as far as I was concerned, yes. But I cannot answer as to any other person's reactions to him out in training or wherever. I would have thought, in the main, he would be well thought of.
Mm. And what about Colonel Jennett? You're saying he's quite a...
Well, Colonel Jennett was a different kettle of fish, because
he'd been in the army in India.
Well, as I said, different kettle of fish. He'd be regimented. He'd act like a regular soldier. And he's very decisive and expected you to do exactly what was wanted of you and what you were trained for. I thought very highly of him.
Did he have a different way of carrying on, sort of being from abroad, as it were, to the... officers you were used to?
Well, at home? At home I was on a drawing board, and...
No, I was thinking of the Colonel Heseltine and so on. I mean, he was very different to them, was he, in his way of carrying on or his style?
What do you mean different to...
Well, you were saying he came from India, and he was sort of quite an unusual...
Well, Jennett came from India.
Yes.
It's a regular soldier as against a territorial.
Right. So he was a little more professional or more efficient.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Much more efficient.
Right. So he sort of lifted the general level of efficiency, did he, of the...
Oh, yes. I mean, as soon as he appeared, you realised that he was a different man. And not to be... he was, as I said, decisive, and you had to do it as he wanted it. As it should be. Otherwise you don't get any proper reaction. Anyway,
and you were training all this time. I mean, the engineers were being trained, were they? Were they doing schemes and learning?
Well, now that I was in chief engineer in Northern Ireland, when you ask me were they being trained, the division, because chief engineer then covered the whole area, and whoever happened to be in Ireland, you know, which had any sort of relationship with the Royal Engineers besides the 53rd Welsh Division. Because I'd left the 53rd Welsh Division once I went to Chief Engineer Northern Ireland, and then Chief Engineer First Army, it was goodbye. And that's why I said when you rang me up about 53rd, I said then that I had, or about 2 years, I suppose, 2 years plus in the 53rd Division.
Did the 53rd have a real sort of identity? Did you, were people, were you proud of being in the 53rd?
Oh, yeah. I was very proud of being in the 53rd Division, and I think most of the soldiers were. Obviously, there were some that would have preferred to have been out of it, but in the main, yes, we were all proud of serving in the 53rd Division.
Were you aware while you were in Ireland of the troubles with the nationalists and so on?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How did that
happen? Not necessarily with the nationalists, but religion. I mean, one got into it straight away that the Protestants, the pros, would talk about the Catholics, and the Catholics would talk about the pros. They hated each other. And the children, of course, brought up in this, and it's the same, it's never changed.
How did they perceive you then? Did they fit you in as sort of Protestants or Catholics?
Oh, yes. It would have mattered in actual fact. It was like it is today. It's the agitators, the people who really don't think, I suppose. It's.
Did you have to take precautions to sort of ensure your safety at all?
No,
you
know? Not at all. But I do know that I had a girlfriend, and her father was a policeman, and he came on one night, he'd been attacked, which rather shook me, and he was bleeding all over. But in the main, we had a calm stay there, except for the German bombing. But we did see this undercurrent of religion, bigotry, which wasn't very pleasant.
What was the social life like there? I mean, was there a lot laid on for you, or did you mix with the local communities?
No, I think you made your own social life. There was the odd dance, but they sometimes became fights. I wasn't involved, but yeah, there were parks in the summer, you know, there were parks and that sort of thing, but and there was night school if you wanted to go to night school, the techs.
Mm-hmm. And did some soldiers do that?
Oh yes, we went to technical college.
Mm-hmm. To do what?
To study whatever you wanted to do. Drawing, engineering, drawing, maths, whatever. This was at Belfast Technical College. But as for social life, you made your own. And you got mixed up. You mixed up with the civilian population, and you had a drink in the pub. And it was all right.
So
I can't speak, though, about the companies that were out in places like Antrim or other towns like Omagh, Dundalk, companies. Whilst we were headquarters in Belfast, backtracking now, the companies would be in places like Dundalk or Omagh. And other places.
Did you have a sense of what the 53rd would be used for in the future? I mean, you were over there, they were training, they were preparing, as it were. Did you have a sense of that you were being saved for something, or were you just protecting Ireland?
Oh, no. I think one thought that ultimately, yes, we were going to be moved somewhere, but where, we didn't know. I mean, for instance, when I was with Chief Engineer, Northern Ireland, things did become a little more clearer, because I had to go to Inniskillen and make surveys of the land in that area to erect camps to take the Americans, which was before we knew, or anyone knew, that America would declare war.
Really?
And then as soon as the ships were sunk, the American ships out in the, where was that, Pacific?
Pearl Harbor, dear.
They moved them over.
Right. So you were told that the Americans would be coming over? You know, that there would be some Americans coming over? And
well, I wasn't told insofar as bluntly as you suggest, but that we had to go and survey the area of Enniskillen for future camps. And we just wondered who it was for. And these things become known. No, you weren't told point blank. It happened.
Yeah. Have you told me the name of the Chief Engineer of Northern Ireland that you were?
Jennet.
No, he was Jennet, right, okay. Do you know what his engineering background was? What he'd done, you know, previously, as it were?
I think I would have thought that he would have gone to Chatham School of Military Engineering. Being a regular soldier, he'd have probably gone to Sandhurst and then become a Royal Engineer and gone to Chatham School of Military Engineering and then be sent to a unit. That would be as a regular before the war.
Right. So you don't know what particular enterprises he'd been involved in India?
No.
No, right. Okay, fine. So you were in Northern Ireland until?
1942.
Uh-huh.
And then went to Largs in Scotland.
Right.
In August 1942.
Uh-huh. As what and doing what?
Well, I joined Chief Engineer, First Army.
Uh-huh.
And the First Army was being assembled in that area for what we did not know. We were stationed the headquarters, First Army. Most of the personnel worked and were billeted actually in Skelmorley Hydro, which was just outside Largs. And then I did some work, surveys for various things like accommodation, but it was mainly, we mainly assembled there for something which we didn't know what. And then I got a call, I was instructed to go down to London, and I didn't know what for. But when I got there, I was billeted in a Wyatt, well, it was a youth hostel near Paddington Station, and I had to report to Cumberland Hotel, to the annex actually, which is opposite the Cumberland Hotel, or was. And I found that they were planning the invasion of North Africa there. And of course we were all sworn to secrecy and etc. And there I worked on maps of North Africa, pinpointing, or the officers would, because I was still a sergeant, would say that, you know, that's the possibility of a site for a hospital, and that's the sort of work I did in the Cumberland Annex.
Right. Who was actually organised? Who was in charge? Who was actually doing this planning? Do you know any names?
Well, there was a Major Glendenin and a Major Holloway. Mm-hmm. I can remember, and there were other officers. I've forgotten their names.
Which areas of North Africa were you actually looking at in detail?
Any area, really. In Algeria, from Algiers east, including Constantine, to Tunis itself.
Was there a specific plan of where landings might be made or whatever, or was...
We weren't told at that stage exactly where landings were going to be made. We only knew that we were working on maps of North Africa, not for the fun of it, but for an invasion.
When you say you were working on them, you were identifying particular features, were you?
An officer would be deciding where are hospitals. We were mainly concerned with hospitals at that stage. I can't remember any sort of accommodation camps or anything like that. It was just pinpointing places for hospitals.
So you think that probably they'd made a lot of plans already, and this was...
Well, they'd be rough sketches, yeah. Actually. They wouldn't be, But I think, I know, that the reason for that sort of planning is that they could then tell the Ordnance Corps, Ordnance Company, that probably going to need so many hospitals of about this size, and they would then be able to requisition the amount of materials, tents, there'd be marquees, etc., that they need to take on the ships, because every unit or division, and their different arms would have to assess exactly what did they want in the way of stores and equipment, and they were told to allow for losing a quarter of them by sinking on the way. That's what happened to me in London, yeah, in the Cumberland Hotel.
Yeah. So what was the atmosphere like in the Cumberland Annex? I mean, was there a sort of...
Oh, it was very busy.
Sense of excitement.
Very busy, yeah. Yeah. Everybody went out with their different jobs. And yes, it was exciting.
Mm. Was there a sense of urgency that this information was going to be needed quite soon?
Yeah, everything was urgent then. But we didn't exactly know when it would happen. Just...
So how long were you there in London, at the Cumberland?
Yeah, London, from the 24th of the 9th, 1942, to the 21st of the 10th. So that's not long. About, was it 3 weeks or so?
What was the atmosphere like in London then? Because, I mean, you know...
Well, it's quite... In those days, it was the lull. I've forgotten what they called it now. Was it the false... It was quite peaceful.
Hmm.
I think they were more unhappy in places like Swansea and Plymouth, where they were being bombed. But... at that time in London, I can't remember any commotion whatsoever.
Mm.
As I say, it was only about a month I was there.
Right.
So then I went back to Largs. And I left London on the 21st of the 10th, and then Skelmorley the next day, and then on the 29th of the 10th we were a ship on the Clyde in our overcoats.
When you say we, who is this?
The whole boiling lot.
All lot of you, right. You were put on a ship in the Clyde.
The army, yeah. And just knowing where we were going, yeah.
So you were told you were off somewhere?
No.
No.
No one was told anything.
Right.
But I knew, being concerned, that we were going to North Africa. It was obvious. But as we were all wearing greatcoats and full kit and full khaki, and it was October, at the end of October, 29th, I could hear people saying, we must go to Iceland or somewhere. I used to think, it is funny that we've got all these greatcoats, but I knew where we were going.
Mm.
Anyway, we sailed down the Clyde from cheers from thousands of people. They got to know that we were going, nine in each side of the Clyde. And, of course, we came out of the Clyde and turned north up the Irish Sea and went through the top of Ireland, and we ended up in a convoy of 33 ships escorted by the Navy, and we sailed for America.